Okay, the group would like to welcome our speaker for tonight, who is Megan from Philadelphia.
Hi, my name is Megan and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Sarah for asking me to come up here, my friends for joining me. Good? Okay. I feel like I've known Sarah for a long time. My sobriety date is July 12th, 2004, and I met Sarah when she was really active in Philadelphia, and she was involved in the first Acts of Recovery that Philadelphia ever put on, one of the first speaker meetings that Philadelphia ever had, and it's really cool to see her again. My home group is the Port Fishington speaker meeting. When I speak out of town, I feel like I have to explain why my group is called, well, not my group, but my home group is called Port Fishington speaker meeting. It's because it's in an area where it's like the neighborhoods of Port Richmond, Fishtown, and Kensington. So, Port Fishington. It's been my home group for a while, and I love being a part of that group. That's pretty much why I don't get to this meeting often, because, my home group's on a Monday night, 7:30. To my knowledge, it was the first speaker meeting in Philadelphia, and it's been really cool. A group of my friends from the last stop put it on, started it, and it's been really cool being a part of it. I love the speaker meeting format. I always have, and it's a big part of my early sobriety is when, we started, doing road trips to other speaker meetings. Because when I got sober, there were no hour-long speaker meetings in Philadelphia, so we were traveling to Delaware and Harbor City, Baltimore, and York, Pennsylvania, and, I have really good memories of, these road trips from early sobriety, and we still do stuff like that today often. I mean, tonight's a road trip. Saturday we went out to Columbus for the Acts of Recovery, and I just love getting in the car and the conversations that happen, and I feel like that's really when you can really get to know people. I'm here just to tell you guys what I was like, what happened, what I'm like today. I try not to stray from that format. I think that's a speaker's job when they get up here. And I start off, before I ever picked up a drink, because for me, I think it's pretty relevant. And I was born and raised in Northeast Philadelphia, which is a pretty decent area of Philadelphia. I can't name any other alcoholics in my family, even my extended family. I am the alcoholism in the Getz family. I don't know. My parents are still married today. I think they just celebrated their 37th wedding anniversary. I had a happy childhood. and it's funny because I used to use these things to say, well, I must not be an alcoholic. Because I remember the first time I was in rehab, I was 19, and this could be wrong. My perception of things is often wrong. But it just seemed like I heard a lot of people talk about horror stories when they were a kid and child abuse and alcoholism in their family and, divorce and broken homes. And, and I didn't have, any event to point to in my life to say this is why I drank. I drank to escape from this or, I drank to, escape these feelings. And, I once thought that was needed. I used to equate circumstances of alcoholism, which, when it was finally explained to me what alcoholism is, with the stressing of the spiritual malady, that's not my experience today. But, my parents, are just awesome people. My dad quit his own plumbing business and took a job at a local university so me and my brother can get free college tuition. My mom worked two jobs. When I got to high school, she started working two jobs. So me and my brother can get a Catholic school education. This is the family that I come from. And it's crazy because, and I say this all the time, when I first got sober, if you would have asked me about my family, I wouldn't have told you any of that. You know, like the first names on my resentment list were mom and dad. And I had so much blame. I blame them for everything. Like, I had so much anger towards them. And it's ridiculous, the thing that I was, things that I was angry at them for. You know, but so, you know, I've happy childhood. I remember just to me as a kid, like, this world was like this big, happy, fun, exciting place. And, you know, I had friends in school. I had friends in the neighborhood. I loved hanging out with the neighborhood kids on weekend nights. Like, I would stay out until, like, my parents forced me to come home. You know, and, like the earliest, when I look back, the earliest I remember, like, starting to feel uncomfortable about myself and, you know, all those negative thoughts in my head was around the time I was about 12 years old when my family decided to move. And, you know, it's, like, funny now because we moved, like, 10 minutes away from the house that we were living in. But, like, if you're familiar with Philadelphia, like moving to a new neighborhood can be like moving to another world. You know, and I had to switch schools and leave all my friends. And I was 12, so it's not like I could just, like, hop on the bus and go visit my old friends. Like, you know, and that was around the time that, like, I started to feel really uncomfortable. The new school that I went to, I wouldn't leave my house until, like, 2 minutes before the school bell would ring because I wouldn't want to stay in the yard with the other kids. Like, that's how much. And, like, I did that up until, like, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. You know, it's not like I did that, like, the first couple weeks of school and then I was good to go. Like, I felt uncomfortable. Like, I felt like the new kid up until 8th grade graduation. And, you know, and I just had a really hard time. And I don't know what that is, you know, and I'm sure, like, I know I'm not the only one with that experience. I've actually recently, I feel like I've heard a handful of people share that same experience. But, you know, it was around that time that, like, the world went from this, like, big, fun, happy, exciting place to, like, this scary place where, like, I didn't feel comfortable outside with the other kids, you know. And, like I actually, I would dread recess. Like, what kid dreads recess? Because it's like that was the time when all the kids would get up and go sit with their friends and, like, you know, and I wouldn't know what to do. And I don't know. But luckily, I started drinking. and, you know, and I don't even know, like, where it came from. I really don't. Like, the first time I ever got drunk, I had a sleepover at my parents' house, and in my parents' basement at the time, they had this bar with a lot of different kinds of liquor. And my parents are not big drinkers. To be honest, I don't know if I've ever seen my mom or dad drunk. But it was me and two of my friends, and we were in the basement. And I don't know, like, if I planned it or if it was, like, spur of the moment, but I was just like, I want to know what it feels like to be drunk. And my friends were like, okay, you do that. Like, we're not gonna. So I took a bottle of Seagram 7, and I started taking shots that night. And I got drunk, and, like, nothing crazy happened that night. You know, like, we were just pretty much confined to my parents' basement. Like, but I just remember, like, I loved how it made me feel. You know, as simple as that. Like, I loved how alcohol made me feel. And, you know, the next day, I remember telling my friends, like, I want to feel that way as much as I can. And I meant it. Like, and, you know, at the time, like, I didn't know what that decision meant. But, you know, I pretty much pursued that feeling for the next, like, 6 years or whatever. And, you know, and like, in the beginning, like, I didn't have, you know, for me as a 13, 14-year-old kid, it's not like every night I had every opportunity to drink. But from the very beginning, like, if every opportunity I had to get drunk, I took, you know. And and it was usually just involved, like, you know, stealing from our parents' liquor cabinets and, you know, whatnot, getting people to buy us beer. And, you know, but it was like a year later when I was 15 that, you know, the opportunities became more. And it kind of, like, went to a whole nother level. It was around this time that I started, like, I had my first blackout Halloween when I was 15. Like, I started drinking alone. There would be, like, these high school dances that me and my friends would go to, and we'd all, like, meet up at a friend's house and, like, you know, to get ready for the dance. And, like, they, you know, their way of getting ready was to, like, get dressed up and, like, spend hours putting on makeup and whatnot and deciding what they're going to wear. And for me, like, my way of getting ready was drinking. Like, I didn't care about any of that other stuff. Like, as long as I was drunk, I was good. You know, and it was around that time that I started hiding alcohol in my bedroom. I took an empty Poland Spring bottle, and I went to my parents, like, behind the bar. I took from, like, 7 different kinds of liquor bottles, and I had this Poland Spring bottle hidden in my 101 Dalmatians sleeping bag in my closet. And it just, like, gave me this, like, hiding it, like, gave me this. It's not like I like, filled it up and I was like, I need this right now. Like, I remember, like, I filled up that bottle and I'm like, this is for, like, emergencies. Like, this is in case, like, I can't get it any other way. And, like, you know, this is me, like, not even a year after I just started drinking. And, you know, my parents, they caught me a handful of times and I never remember it being a big deal except for this one incident that was, like, a turning point for me. When I was 15, my parents read my diary. You know, I think they, like, suspected something was going on. And like, I got to tell you, like, the reason why I started that diary was because I was having, like, so much fun drinking that, like, I wanted to document it all. Like, that's not even an exaggeration. Because I went from this, like, you know, this, like, really scared, like, super low self-esteem, hating myself to, like starting drinking. And it's like, even when I wasn't, I think I heard a speaker say this the other day, like, even when I wasn't physically drunk, like, just having, like, alcohol be, like, a presence in my life, like, just, like, oh, I remember, it was Maureen, she said I held my head higher. And, like, you know, I nodded my head when I heard that girl say that Saturday, because that was my experience. Like, you know, I felt like a new person, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to document all this fun I'm having. And I'll tell you what, like, I've seen my dad cry on, like, probably 2 occasions in my whole life. Once was when his mom died, and the other time was the night that my parents read my diary. Like, I saw my dad cry at the things he read his daughter was doing. And they sat me down that night, and my mom looked me in my eyes, and she said, as long as you live in this house, you are never going to drink again. And you know what? Like, I believed her. Like, and the fear that I felt that night was, like, I went insane. Like, to the point where I had actually made a plan to kill myself. Like, my plan was the next morning when my parents left for work, I was going to go to an overpass on Woodhaven Road by Franklin Mills Mall by my house, and I was going to jump, and that was it. Because I could not imagine what my life would be like without alcohol. And, you know, and, like, thank God sanity returned throughout the night. I didn't go to Woodhaven Road or any of that. But I say that incident was a turning point because for a couple of reasons. Like, first of all, after that point on, like, my relationship with my family changed completely. Like, I became a stranger to my own immediate family. You know, they no longer knew who my friends were, what I was doing when I left the house. Like, nothing about me because, you know, it's not like I was going to stop drinking. You know, and I had to protect my drinking. It was a turning point because this was when I started, you know, drinking different forms of alcohol that were easier to get, easier to hide. And, you know, I'm going to keep it to alcohol. Like, I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. But you could use your imagination. And anything that makes me feel good, I do alcoholically. And I don't know, and that's what happened. And, like, the progression was pretty quick. Like, I went from little girl to a junkie alcoholic in a short amount of time. And, you know, meanwhile, though, on the outside, things look okay. And it's because of my parents. You know, like I said, I had the college education lined up. And I was getting good grades in school because, like, I feared disappointing other people. Like, you know, so I would try to excel at things like school. And, you know, and I started working at a supermarket by my house where I was constantly supplementing my income, and I had, like, this scheme with cartons of cigarettes, and I was selling them. I was selling single packs and cartons to, like, you know, corner stores in North Philly, so I had, like, you know, money from the job and then, you know, money from stealing from my family and, like, getting RA grades and roof over my head because of mom and dad. You know, they never had the heart to kick me out, and, you know, and there was a period where, like, you know, the alcohol was working and, like, all the outside stuff looked all right. And, you know, like, I think I knew deep down inside, though, that wasn't going to last. And, you know, and it didn't. And the first time I had tried to get sober, I was 19, and I had just been arrested for a DUI and some other charges. And, you know, it's not like they put the cuffs on and I was like, I'm going to get sober, you know. What happened was the next day, like, I had to call reliable friends to get me to where the police left my car. So I called up friends that I had in high school, because by this point, you know, I'd left my high school friends. You know, I actually was, like, literally, like, 3 weeks after senior week, I was like, all right, they don't drink like I do. And I started hanging out in this other neighborhood where I wouldn't even have to call people. Like, I would just show up in this neighborhood, and there was people out. There was always something to do. You know, this was where, like, a whole new world was open up for me there. And, you know, so I called up my old friends, and I told them, you know, that I'd been arrested. And in the back seat of my friend Mary Kate's car, I broke down. And I told them everything I'd been doing, because there was a lot going on that people didn't know. And they took me to my parents, and I told my parents what was going on. And, you know, we decided I was going to go to an outpatient program. You know, because I was in school at the time, and, you know, it wasn't that important enough to, like, withdraw from school, you know. So I was just going to, like, you know, keep doing what I was doing and go to this outpatient at night. And, you know, and, like, I do remember wanting to stop hurting from alcoholism, but not willing to do anything that was suggested. And, like, you know, believe me, they pointed us in the right direction. Like, you know, I'm not up here to, like, bash outpatients or rehabs, because, you know, they told us go to meetings, get a sponsor. And I think I showed up to more meetings drunk than I did sober. You know, like, I couldn't imagine being, like, anywhere with other human beings, like, especially people I didn't know, you know, sober. Like sobriety, like, hurt, and I couldn't show up anywhere. And, you know, so continue on drinking, and they put me in the partial program, which is, you know, like a 9-to-5 deal, 5 days a week. And I remember thinking, like, this is going to be so much better. Like, I'm going to be away from the neighborhood longer and, you know, get more knowledge on my disease. And still the same deal, like, wanting to stop but not being willing to do what you know, they're asking us to do. And, you know, so once again, I pick up a drink again, and then I end up in the inpatient program. So, I mean, this is, like, if you're following, this is, like, completely backwards. Like the rehab process is, like, the other way around. So it was, like, a really tough time. I mean, like, there were days, you know, there were days, like, I would wake up and I would have this, like, motivation and this desire to stay sober, and then it's, like, the next hour, the next minute, like, that, my mind would just change. But, you know, for whatever reason, halfway through, like, my 28-day rehab, I got serious about it. And I was like, you know what, like, when I get out of here, like, I don't want to go back to how I was living. And I was scared to leave the rehab. I cried the day that I was discharged because I was so scared to go back to, like, you know, what I was doing before. And, you know, and I left there, and I made a 2:00 meeting at this meeting by my parents' house. And that night I met up with my outpatient counselor, and I remember telling her that I had a motivation to stay sober, and I was going to do it this time. You know, it was going to be different this time. And, like, you know what, like, I could have been hooked up to a lie detector test, and I bet you I would have passed it. That's how much I meant what I was telling her. You know, but what happened was, the very next day, like, literally 2 days out of rehab, I'm in my bedroom at my parents' house, and I start to feel bored. And, like, it was as simple as that. Like, and I didn't leave the house like, oh, I'm going to go drink. I left the house that day, and I said, I'm going to go see how my friends in the neighborhood are doing. And, you know, by that night, I was drunk. And within a few months, you know, I was physically addicted to alcohol. And it was, like, at this whole other level. And, you know, I had gotten fired from that first job for stealing, you know. And I worked there for, like, 4.5 years, which for me, like, my first and only job at the time, like, that was, like, a while, you know. And I remember the police, like, walking me out of that job, and, like, people I worked with for 4.5 years, like, wouldn't even look at me, you know, and just, like, the shame from that. And, you know, so after losing my job, like, I didn't have an income, so that's when I started pawning things out of my parents' house. Like, you know, I remember, like, rummaging through my mom's jewelry cabinet, and, you know, It just got really bad really quick. And eventually I did. I got another job waitressing, which was, fast cash. I know, it's, no better. But I feel like when I get to this part of my story, I don't even know what to say. Because it's I wish I could, tell you, oh, I got fired and I got kicked out of school and my parents kicked me out. But, none of that happened. What happened was, I just became so miserable. Life was just, unbearable. And I was still in school, still getting good grades, working that waitressing job. I actually worked more hours than any other server at that job. I was, a hard worker because I needed that money, and roof over my head because of mom and dad. So on paper, things looked all right. But, it reached a point where I became so miserable that it was it was security to know, well, if it ever gets bad, bad enough, I'll just kill myself. Having suicide is a comfortable option. And it went on like that for a little bit. And, I'm leaving a lot out for sake of time. But, there was a year period after I got out of rehab that I tried to get physically sober probably about 5 or 6 times. And, I just could not do it. I think the longest I lasted was maybe about 24 hours before I was in my car racing down 95 to Kensington. I just could not do it. And, because sobriety was just unbearable. And for months, I don't know, it's weird. And I remembered this the last time that I spoke. Towards the end, I would actually, envision myself being sober. I wanted to be sober so bad towards the end that, I would actually, visualize it. And, but I kind of knew, deep down inside that, something was going to have to happen. And eventually it did. And it's not even this was, the worst or most horrible, circumstance to ever occur in my drinking. But I ended up, totaling this car that I owned for about 4 hours. It was my aunt's car. And it took me, a few years to pay off in sobriety, by the way. But I bought my aunt's car, and I was going to pay her monthly. And the night that I picked it up, 4 hours later, it was completely totaled. And I remember standing next to this total car and just being out of ideas, out of schemes, out of lies, out of the energy to even think of any lies. And I just, I had this intense feeling, your life drinking is never going to work. And, what I did was I called up my parents, because that's what I do when I'm in a jam. And I told them what had just happened, and I said, you know what, next week when I'm done taking my finals, I'm going to check myself in a detox. I don't know, when people tell me that today, I'm going to go in next Friday, I'm like, all right, sure, good plan. And I'm sure, I don't know, my parents, still to this day, I don't think they know that much about alcoholism, but they were like, okay, all right, that's what you're going to do. And, within that week, sometimes I wonder, if this incident didn't happen, where I would be today. But it was one of the last times I'd met up with my bartender. And we were at Broad and Girard in, North Philadelphia-ish. And he had to take me to my bank in Northeast Philadelphia because I didn't have any cash on me. And, if you know Philly, that's, a 20-minute drive. And, I did not plan on telling this guy that I, had plans to check myself in the detox that week or, any of that. But somehow it came up in the conversation that we were having that he was once a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told me that he once had, 5 years sober, and that when he was sober in NAA, his life was good. And, in that car ride, I got this glimmer of hope that maybe life sober can be good. Which I look back and, I don't know, that's something I didn't have before. Those 5 or 6 attempts to getting physically sober prior to that, I wanted to stop hurting from alcoholism. I wanted to stop living the life I was living. I wanted to stop hurting people, but, I did not believe that, happiness and sobriety can go together. And, I am sure, I know that there were people that told me, you can be happy and sober at the same time. But, I never believed them. To the point where, the first time when I was in inpatient rehab, like, me and my roommate, like, came up with this, like, conspiracy theory that, like, the outside speakers that came in for the nightly AA meeting, that, like, because the rehab was government funded, that the government told the outside speakers what to say when they came in. Because they would, you know, say things like beyond my wildest dreams, and like my roommate and I would be like, nah, like, they're lying. That's impossible. But when this guy told me that, like, I believed him, and I got this glimmer of hope that maybe life sober could be good. So I did. I did what I said I was going to do, and I checked myself into detox, and I also went packed for the rehab, but they wouldn't fund me again for it, which at the time I would have told you that's like the most horrible thing in the world to happen to me. But looking back, like, it's also, I don't know where I'd be without that, because they wouldn't fund me for the rehab. That's why I agreed to go into a recovery house, because, you know, my parents, they wanted me back home. You know, like I said, they don't know much about alcoholism, and I think they thought, like, they could just, like, lock me in my bedroom and I'd be okay. But I agreed to go to this recovery house in the Frankfurt section of Philadelphia. And the mandatory meeting of that recovery house was a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd never been to AA before. I was going to other fellowships, and I don't know. Like, I remember thinking, like, oh, how are these people going to help me? It's because I didn't know anything about alcoholism. Believe me, like, I drink alcoholically, but, like, I would look at the other things, and I'd be like, that's got to be the problem. You know, it's not that. You know, but we go to this meeting, and I don't know. Like, I see a handful of people who are happy, and you know, they're sober, and I believe them. You know, it appears genuine. So, and actually, in the format of their meeting, it says, we suggest a year for sponsorship. So what I did when I was new was I waited till this girl had a year because I wanted, like, a sponsor that was my age, which is totally not necessary, by the way. But so I waited till this girl had her year. So I went, like, a month or so without a sponsor, which I don't suggest. Like, I was clinging to, like, anything that, like, you know, showed me attention, like, just, you know, human dependency. And but luckily I finally grabbed this girl, get her sponsor me, and she asked me to read the doctor's opinion, and we met up at her apartment. And, you know, in the very first time I think we met, we talked about the doctor's opinion in 1, 2, and 3. And she said, you know, we got on our knees, we said the third step prayer together, and she said, come back in a week and I'm going to start you on your fourth step. And within a week, within that week, she drank again. And I had so much fear of doing the fifth step. Like, not so much writing out the inventory, but of sitting down with another human being and telling the complete truth about who I was. I had so much fear of doing that that I didn't do it. You know, I just couldn't imagine, like, ever being comfortable enough with anybody else in this whole world other than her. You know, so what I did was I didn't get another sponsor, and I didn't write out the fourth step. And meanwhile, I was still going to meetings, still living in the recovery house, surrounded by people in AA, like, 24 hours a day. When I had around 70 days sober, I drank again. And I didn't plan on drinking that day. I left the house with friends from the recovery house. You know, it was like, I think my first weekend passed. And early in the afternoon, a thought popped into my head. And, you know, by, like, late afternoon, it was an obsession. And, you know, for me, like, when I get an obsession, there's no calling anybody. There's no hitting a meeting. Like, my mind was made up, and I was going to go drink. And we were in Upper Darby at the time, so we had to take a trolley back into Philadelphia where we were going to go to this party. And we were sitting there waiting for the trolley, and I was actually crying because I knew I was going to go drink, and that's how much, like, I still did not want to. You know, and that night I ended up at this bus terminal in Frankfurt at, like, 2 a.m., nowhere to go, calling up my parents, making up a lie about why I had to come home. And they were clueless. They didn't know. They believed me. And, you know, I remember the next day leaving my parents' house. My mom gave me money. And, you know, I just felt, like, so horrible taking that money because I had no intentions of being sober. And my plan was that Tuesday I had off from work and I was going to, you know, pack my things up, tell my parents I graduated from the recovery house, you know, can I come back home? And I was just going to continue how I was living before, and that was my plan. And what happened was, because I didn't want to make, like, I didn't tell anybody in the house I relapsed. You know, I didn't want to make a big deal about it. I didn't want to, you know, I don't know. So I still had to follow the rules of the house between, like, that Sunday, Tuesday period. So I still went to the mandatory meetings. And I was at this one Monday morning meeting, and this woman, the very first woman that chaired from the floor, this woman, Darla, I will never forget her, she talked about how she drank over the weekend. And I started listening because I just drank over the weekend. And I don't know, like, I guess you can call it a moment of clarity. Like, in that meeting, I was like, I got to do this. Like, I can't go back to how I was before. And I got honest, you know, I got honest that I relapsed. And what I did was I grabbed a sponsor immediately because I was in so much pain, you know, and I had so much willingness. And, like, that's actually kind of what fueled my second step experience. Like, you know, because I really felt, like, in my heart that, like, that willingness came from something greater than me. You know, and I grabbed this woman that, you know, she wasn't my age. I didn't think that, like, I could relate to her. But I knew that she had experience with the steps and was taking other girls through. And what this woman did was she threw me right into action. She put me right on my fourth step. You know, she wrote out the inventory pretty much, like, right from the big book. And I got to work, and it was the first inventory I'd ever done, and it was the first time in my life that I really saw the truth in black and white in my own handwriting. And I had a powerful experience writing out that fourth step. I really did. Like one that always comes to mind, like just like the ridiculousness of it. I was angry at my dad, because I used to steal from his wallet, like, every other day, and I knew that he knew, but he wouldn't approach me about it. And I was mad at him for not approaching me about it. It's, like, funny now, but, like, the reality is, like, he's watching his, like, 19-year-old daughter kill herself and, like, consistently steal from him. Like, I couldn't imagine being in that position today. Like, you know, a parent and their child, but, I don't know, and like seeing the truth, and still, like, when I went to do that fifth step, like, I remember walking to my sponsor's apartment, which was just like maybe 6 blocks from my recovery house, and like still being so scared and thinking like, you don't have to do this, like, you can go drink, you know. But I just I went over there, and I'd actually had a whole page of my fourth step that I had ripped out. And I had it folded over, and I put it in the back of the copy book because it was a whole page of things that I didn't know that if I was going to have the courage to talk to her about it. Because it was pretty much the page of things that I was so scared of what somebody else was going to think of me, you know, that, like, I just could never be honest about it. And when we met up, I think it was the first thing that I blurted out. and it was incredible. Like, you know, and I walked away from that... fifth step just feeling really good, you know, like, and, you know, just walking through that fear. And, like, I feel like if I had to, like, sum up my experience in sobriety, and once again, this is just my perception, I could be wrong, I feel like it's just, like, over and over again, like, me walking through fears and, like, getting to the other side and, like, realizing that it's going to be okay, you know. And, like, for me, like, that's where, like, the God dependency comes from, you know, because, like, still, like, I think my favorite AA cliche is, like, the peeling of the onion, you know. And, you know, still, like, 8 years sober, like, this year, like, something came up that, like, I realized, like, I was just really fearful to do for, like, a really long time, and, like, and I did it, and I'm, like, why was I so scared of that for, like, my whole life, you know. And, I don't know, and it's just, like, that over and over again. But, you know, so I like the results I was getting from this, and I just kept my feet moving. And, you know, it's funny because my original A-step list actually didn't even have on it, like, what ended up being my most powerful men's experience to date. Because I was pretty delusional when it came to, like, what these men's were about. Like, where it says, except to do so would injure them or others, I grouped, like, 75 to 80% of my men's into that category. Like, that's not an exaggeration, because, like, I'm aware that I have, like, somewhat innocent-looking face, and I would, like, use that to my advantage. And a lot of the harms that I did, like, I think people didn't know that I did them. Like, one for example, was the restaurant I was working at. I worked there at the worst of my alcoholism, and I ended up telling them, you know, what I was doing and that I wanted to go into detox. And, like, these people were, like, great with me. Like, they, after detox, like, I had, like, I made my own schedule, and, you know, and they were so awesome with me, and they didn't know that for, like, the first 6 to 8 months I worked there, I was stealing from them. There was actually somebody else that they thought was doing it. And, you know, and I remember, like, it came to my attention that, like, I would have to make that amends, because it wasn't on my A-step list. And, when it first came to my attention, I was like, no, no way. It's not worth it, you know? And, you know, but, like, it just kept weighing on me. And what ended up happening was, by this point in my sobriety, I was sponsoring other people. And I was sponsoring this girl, Shannon. And she ended up doing, like, 2 weeks in jail as part of clearing the wreckage from her past. And I remember after, you know, she got locked up in Arlington, Virginia, I had, like, this 3.5-hour drive home from Virginia to Philadelphia, and I remember, like, thinking, like, how am I going to take this girl, you know, to do jail time, and meanwhile, like, I can't make a financial amends to Friendly's because I'm scared I'm going to lose my job. You know, like, what kind of example is that? And, you know, and that's, like, one of the many, like, cool things about sponsorship. Like, it often forces me to do things that I normally would not do. You know, because I think, like, how's this going to look for them? You know, what kind of example do I want to be? And I did. I ended up, and also, prior to making this amends, I was going to different people for direction on it. Because I left this out, but the woman that took me through the steps got throat cancer, and she kind of, like, wasn't, I don't want to, like, blame it on her not being available, because I could have sought out other sponsorships. So, like, I went through this period where, like, I wasn't using her as a sponsor. So I was going to different people on direction on how to make this amends. And there were some people that were like, you know, just put money in an envelope, don't write your name on it, slip it under your manager's door. That way wreckage is cleared and you don't have to worry about getting fired. And I was like, yeah, that sounds really good. And there was other people, namely my friend Ante, who was like, Megan, it says made, I wish I could do a Croatian accent to imitate him, but he was like, Megan, it says made direct amends. Like, you know, you go to your sponsor, money in hand, you go to your manager, money in hand, face to face, and tell her what you did. And, like, by this point in my sobriety, because of the experience with the steps that I had, I was somewhat able to tell the difference between my head and my heart. And when he said that, like, that fit in my heart. And, like, I'm not going to stand up here and say, like, I would have drank if I did it, like, you know, clear the wreckage anonymously, but I know for a fact I would have been robbing myself of the experience I ended up having. Because I did. I ended up meeting up with my manager, money in hand, face to face, and I remember telling her that I didn't want to be that employee that I used to be. And it was incredible. You know, my friend Anthony B., picked me up from work that night because I let him borrow my car. And I could tell you guys what songs we listened to on the car ride home that night, because that's just how, you know, powerful the experience was. And I don't know, like, I'm, like, kind of backtracking now, but when I had 90 days for my 90-day anniversary, because I'm sure it's kind of like that around here, but, like, that's when you could, like, first speak at most meetings in Philadelphia. So when I had coming up on 90 days, my friend Joe T. had asked me to speak at the Last Stop, which is, like, this group on Kensington Ave. And I spoke at that group, and it was, like, the very first time I ever spoke. And I remember, like, after the meeting, this guy Scott came up to me and said, "We don't really have much women's sponsorship here. Can you keep coming back?" And, like, you know, and I threw myself into Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I had such a powerful experience with the steps that, like, I wanted to share it with other people. Like, my sponsor didn't have to sit down and be like, Megan, it's time to pass this on. Like, I was calling her, like, can I sponsor this girl? Like, and I don't know. Like, and I ended up, because at this point, or maybe it was months later, I'd moved out of the recovery house, and I moved back in with my parents in Northeast Philly, which is, like, I don't know, by public transportation, like, half an hour, 40 minutes from Kensington. And I was taking, like, SEPTA back and forth, and sometimes my parents would, like, drive me to 2440 Kensington Ave, which I think is crazy. Like, I don't know, if you guys know that area, like, when I was drinking, if I was like, Mom, take me to, you know, Kensington and Huntington, like, she would have had a heart attack. But, you know, but they saw, like, you know, that whatever was going on down there was great, and they would actually take me down there. And I was spending so much time down there that I got the opportunity to move into our house. Well, first I lived in an apartment, but then I moved into this house in Port Richmond, not far from the clubhouse. And some of you guys have been to parties at that house, Dave. but I lived in that house for 3 years in a three-bedroom house. And over the three-year period, no exaggeration, I lived with 12 different people. Like, it was crazy. Like, at one point, we had 7 people living there. Like, all people in AA, like, you know, just trying to do the deal together. And, like, it had, like, the reputation of, like, a sober frat house. And I had so much fun there. Like, I really did. You know, we started throwing, like, these sober parties. And, you know, I don't know. Like, a lot of stuff came from that. But I just... I don't know, like, the first time I ever danced in sobriety, or what was it, one of the sober parties I threw, like, you know, it was just awesome. And I don't know, but I ended up graduating from school and, like, moving out of that house, and, you know, my life's pretty different today. But I don't know, and, like, when it comes to 10, 11, and 12, like, in the beginning, I think I really, really missed out on a lot of stuff that 10, 11 are about. I remember... like, when resentments and fears would crop up, I would have no problem doing, like, 3 of the 4 things, but when it came to talking to somebody else, like, about resentments and fears I was getting, like, I just, like, wasn't willing to do it for a little bit, like, just out of fear of what people would think of me. Because I would think, like, oh, I have, like, a year sober, like, I shouldn't be getting resentful or angry or fearful, which is just, like, ridiculous. Like, the book says clearly, like, when these crop up, not if, you know, and, I don't know, but, like, I would get into enough pain where I'd finally, like, talk to somebody about it. And I'll never forget, like, I think it was around the time I had, like, a year or so sober, and I had this one, like, fear come up, and I was so embarrassed about it. But I had gotten into enough pain that I pulled that guy Scott aside after one of the meetings, and I told him. And I'll never forget his reaction. He started laughing, and he was like, Megan, I went through the same thing. And, like, I don't know, like, some of my coolest 10-step experience have been, you know, similar to that, like, just realizing that, like, we're not different, like, you know, like, you know, that, and it's when I'm not honest with other people about what's going on, that, like, is when that separation comes in, you know, when I start feeling disconnected, and I start feeling, oh, they're not going to understand, or, you know, like, nobody else has probably ever felt this way ever, you know, which is just, like, ridiculous. And, you know, because of slacking on the 10th step, you know, I've written, like, maybe, like, 4 or 5 inventories since I've been sober. But, like, my experience is, though, like, whenever I take an action as it's outlined in the book with the direction of a sponsor, like, I get the results. You know, like, the book has not lied to me for the past 8.5 years, you know. And I'm almost, like, embarrassed to say this, but it is what it is. I really did not give meditation an honest shot until, like, last summer. I don't know, you know, I think I thought I was, like, meditating, and, like, I don't know. I don't think there's, like, a right or wrong way to do it, but what ended up happening was I had this, like, experience at my job, I don't know. Like, I was really trying to see, like, where God was in this situation, and my group of friends are, like, big on meditation, and, like, they would always, like, talk about it, and I'd secretly be like, ugh. Like, but I met up with my sponsor about this, like, work situation, and she was like, you know, ask God to show himself in this situation and meditate. And, like, I did. Like, I set a timer on my phone and, like, silence. You know, because I would think, like, you know, riding my bike or running or, like, you know, just, like, taking a few moments in the car was, like, enough. But, like, to actually, like, set aside you know, like no distractions, like no music, you know, timer, like, you know, thinking about breathing, like to actually do that. I did not start doing that until last summer. And like, you know, I'm not going to stand up here and tell you guys I do this every day, but like the results I've gotten from that, like, are just awesome. Like, and I wish I could like explain in words like what the results have been. I don't think I'm that good of a speaker. Maybe in a couple of years or something I could explain it better. But all I know is like it's just been really, you know, actually that the Monday that I went back to work, it was like a full day spiritual experience. Like, no exaggeration. To the point where the following week, like the week prior, I was like questioning whether I wanted to like stay in that career. And it's like 2 a.m. and I'm looking on Craigslist for other jobs. 2 weeks later, like, I applied to grad school because I decided I wanted to further my career in social work. Like, you know, and that was just how, like, powerful that experience was. And I don't know, like, my life's pretty cool today. Like, my relationship with my family is just, like, it's something that I never thought was even possible. And it always, when I talk about how my relationship with my family is today, I always think about my brother's wedding in October of 2010. They had asked me to be in the wedding. And, like, that night, the night of my brother's wedding, like he pulled me aside, like, two or three times to thank me for being a part of his wedding. You know, and like I know it's because for so long, like, I was never a part of anything in my family. Like, I was not a good daughter. Like, I was not a good sister. I was not a good niece. I was not a good granddaughter. Like, I was, you know, I was just like a horrible person to them. And, you know, and it's really cool to like be able to be there today and like to actually like enjoy seeing my parents. Like, I look forward to seeing my family today. Like, I look forward to holidays. Like, I just, me and two of my friends that actually came with me tonight, we were in Puerto Rico a couple weeks ago. So it was the first holiday I missed, Easter holiday, since I went into rehab. And I was, like, so sad to miss the holiday. And I'm like, who am I? Like, I used to, like, want to get out of holidays so much. Like, I couldn't wait till, like, dinner was over and I could just be out on my own. And, you know, and it's not like that today. And I don't know. I feel like I'm just about done here. So thank you again for letting me share.